Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Third Stream View here on BBS Radio on Monday, November 1st, 2010. Boy, this year went quick. I'm Fred Bedell. I'm PK. I'm your host, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And once again, I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me to produce this show. Last week I said I was a virgin. Well, this week I'm a novice as I get used to this whole format, but I'm enjoying it. And as you know, we have a big election tomorrow, although some of us would say it's just shuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic. So we'll see what happens with the Tea Party and their people who get in and see if they're true to their principles of less spending. But as I mentioned last week, I feel that so many conservatives and Tea Party members still don't get the fact that the military budget and the wars are bankrupting our nation just as much as the welfare state side is. And I'm not a pacifist per se. And please remember that I'm very pro-gun ownership, very pro-gun rights, very pro-gun ownership. So I'm not some cowardly wuss. I'm all for self-defense. But at the same time, I'm not in favor of a foreign policy that gets itself involved in other countries' constant issues of civil war and civil unrest, where we have to bring the American military in to save the day. And meanwhile, it's the costs are just astronomical. I've heard that a gallon of gas for the military in Afghanistan is anywhere from like $600 to $800 when you figure in what it takes to get it there, the mileage that those huge machines get and the whole deal. So it's just a very, very expensive operation. And of course I support our troops. I respect and I thank them for their service and for their bravery. Of course, I don't even question that. Now, that is a completely separate issue from foreign policy, and I'll never let myself be bullied into this concept. Well, you don't support our troops, or if you cut the funding off, we'll cut the troops off. It's not about cutting off the troops. It's about obeying the Constitution, which says that only Congress can declare war. And which is something Ron Paul tried to get passed, but they only had a congressional approval or something like that. It's not the same thing. And I believe that the War Powers Act has been a way for the executive branch or the president to chip away at Congress's responsibility, which declaring war it's in their realm to do this, and they haven't done it, I don't believe, since World War II. So even constitutionally, they're not following their duties. So that is just something that's on my mind about the war and how expensive it is. Plus things at home, it seems like the Obama administration, their only solution is to spend, spend, spend. Well, that comes from his welfare state mentality. Again, this guy's, and so many politicians, they've never run a business or had to meet a payroll. And as a community organizer, if Obama did run a business, quote unquote, or had to meet a payroll, well, it certainly came from taxes. So he wasn't out there in the competitive marketplace trying to put all this together. I didn't get into Obama last show, but I would like to give you my views on Obama at this point. What do you think, Don?
Well, first, I want to say hi, Fred. Doing a great job.
Yeah, I'm just eager to get into things. I got a lot on my mind and not a lot of time to say it, but sorry. Thanks again, Don. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's I'm privileged to be here with you. Thank you for the opportunity to help you out, and I know you're going to do really well. And those that listen to your show last week already know that. That was your first radio show anywhere, and it was heard all over the world. Think of that.
Great. Great. I'm really, really happy about that, and I hope I can make a difference.
Before we go into Obama, I want to just comment on something that you said, because you were talking about the pretext of these political wars, which are really to feed the military-industrial complex, the international bankers, and everybody that benefits from the uniforms and the ammunition and the weapons and on and on.
All wrapped up. Yes, yes. All wrapped up in patriotism, of course.
Yes, yes.
Don't question it.
You know, we, after 9/11, that night, I should say, on the night of 9/11, on the NBC Nightly News, Tom Brokaw showed a film of a big explosion going on in Iraq. That night, big orange mushroom of an explosion from behind a mountain. Now, who knew to have a camera set up to capture that picture dead center?
I mean, wow, I never even heard about that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have the video of it. It was broadcast on the NBC Nightly News, 9/11/2001. And they're talking about the attacks on the World Trade Center, and then they show the clip of this huge bomb going off in Afghanistan, and he's already got the story down. They planned this, and that night was the signal was seen on NBC News. So I thought I would make that point to you because we have this thing going on with Yemen right now, and this is a very short story, so I'm not going to eat up a lot of your time here.
Sure, sure.
The headline of this article, Yemen says UPS planes never take off or land in it. Okay, October 30th. No, this is from Saba. No UPS cargo planes left Yemen to other countries in the last days, and there are no direct flights from Yemen to the United Kingdom or the United States, a Yemeni official said, after allegations that British and U.S. officials had found suspicious packages on planes that originated in Yemen. The official wondered how the media mentioned the name of Yemen, reporting that an explosive device was found on board a cargo plane that landed in London coming from Yemen. UPS planes never land or take off in Yemen, the official made clear.
Wow. Well, you know,
so they're doing the same thing.
Nothing surprises me anymore, and any of these big events that happen, even the Christmas bomber, I mean, he was shadowed by a guy who's got him up to a counter and got him on the plane without a passport. So I just naturally anymore like suspect false flags everywhere are happening to scare the populace and to achieve their, you know, statist, more power agenda over the masses.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's just more of the indoctrination, propaganda, and dumbing down.
And Americans have a lot of fear anyway. Even before 9/11, they're fearful of other countries or other. They don't, you know. Although that's changing, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But you know, so it really suits their aims. And I didn't think I'd see it in my lifetime. And they're really ramping it up too. I mean, you know. And of course, they control the media, so we're out here slugging it out. They don't control this media though, and. We're out here slugging it out, so thanks for that tip. But again, I'm not surprised. And this whole thing has worked to demonize Muslims who, you know, again, and no one's been able to disprove this statement that I'm going to make, is that we had no enemies in the Middle East prior to 1948. And in 1948, Israel was violently imposed on Palestine and its neighbors, and ever since then we've had this problem. And one thing that's going to happen on my show Third Stream View is, since my gloves are off, I will be criticizing Zionism, Israel, Zionist Jewish power. I will be, because it's a very important part of the equation, and I'm not talking about hatred, because when I criticize different things, whether it's groups of people or individuals. Linked to that criticism is never a call for violence or murder or genocide. Never. Mine is always an expose on power, of who wields it and who yields it. And if it steps on a certain group's toes, so be it, because nobody is above, or no group is above criticism. Every group has had its own villains. And of course its own good people too. But I look at who the, you know, who the actors are and follow the money trail.
Amen.
So, you know, that's where I'm coming from. And, I intend to present an objective intellectual case of criticism of Israel and Zionist power. And in my corner, I would welcome, especially the anti-Zionist Jews or the secular Jews, in particular, Rabbi David Weiss, Norman Finkelstein, gentlemen like that who are not afraid to criticize Israel or Jewish or Zionist power, and they've had to suffer some of the consequences because they're always I would automatically be labeled anti-Semitic. I know that, blah blah blah, and then these anti-Zionist Jews or Jews in the past who've written critically of Zionism or Jewish power. We know they've always been referred to as self-hating Jews by the Jewish intelligentsia or the power structure, the Zionist power structure. Well, now they're also referred to as anti-Semitic Jews. So, you know, how absurd is that? But I'm glad that they have spoken up throughout the years. And, you know, they're in my corner. And they'd be welcome at my house. I'd go to dinner with them. I don't hate Jewish people. I'm anti-Zionist. And I won't back away from that. And there's a big difference between Zionism and just rank and file Jewish people who I think have been intimidated throughout the years by the Zionist clique, the secular atheist Zionist clique. So, in fact, I just came up with this phrase a few months ago concerning Israel. I know we're jumping around, but it is relevant. God gave us this land, shouted the atheist Zionist Jews. You see the contradiction in that, if not the humor?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, the this whole Israel thing.
If God gave them the land, why are they so busy trying to steal it from us?
You mean from their neighbors?
Well, you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is going on all around the world. This isn't just here. This is everywhere.
In terms of, you mean Zionism or war?
Zionism and controlling the banks, controlling governments.
Oh,
you know,
extortion
and blackmail. And
isn't it funny that banks are opposed to the gold standard, you know, where they used to, you know, count the gold and have the gold in its security and safety. Now they're opposed to the gold standard. And since we've jumped on the gold standard, let me remind our listeners that gold has a 6,000-year history. It's acceptable worldwide, it's storable, and it's divisible. And it doesn't mean that you would carry piles of gold around you to buy a car or a computer. There could still technically be paper money, but it would be backed by gold, and there wouldn't be the endless creation of paper money backed by nothing.
Yeah, I think they're against the gold standard because, number one, it's got to be controlled by the entity that's been controlling it for so many thousand years. And there's got to be an openness, an accountability, and an approvability of source of funds. Now, when they've stolen the gold, and they know they've stolen it, and everybody knows they stole it, how are they going to account for how they got it? You see, they can't show source of funds under Basel II and Basel III.
They stole it legally with Roosevelt's Emergency Monetary Credit Act, where they, you know, they confiscated people's gold. I think it was 33 or 34. And, they would go to, Don's safety deposit box with a government agent and withdraw that gold, and you get like a, you know, a receipt for it.
Yeah. Well, they stole all the gold, and they're stealing it from foreign countries too.
Yeah. So without a central bank and with a real gold standard, it would be just like, you know, you owning a case of beer, you have control of it. You don't part with any of those bottles unless you give it away. So you would be in control of it. That's part of the beauty of the gold standard. But when it's controlled by government, then we have a problem, because actually the history of money is that money originated in the marketplace centuries ago, millenniums ago. long ago. It originated in the marketplace, and over time, governments took over the creation of money and the control of money, and they monopolized it. So that's what's happened. So, you know, people talk about a separation of church and state. Well, I'd like to see it separation of, you know, money and state, religion, you know, industry and government, all these separations I would like, and no subsidies. Just, you know, the government would enforce contracts and, you know, protect our nation, the two basic things that it can't even do.
Well, what facilitated, you're very correct in saying that government took it over. What facilitated that was the organized crime element.
Well, all governments partake in organized theft. So, you know, they were able to overwhelm the people and just, you know, take their gold. And kings would clip the gold, clip the coins to make them worth less. And, you know, then the inflationists with their paper money came around and thought, ooh, we'll just print, print, print. And, you know, we'll give the people the illusion that their money's backed by something sound, you know, when it isn't.
Yeah.
And sound money is one of the pillars of Austrian economics, which I am a staunch proponent of. That and the entrepreneur as the center driving force of society, and the time factor between production and you know, delivery of goods. So you know, it all ties in, and that's why I'm weaving a lot of things together that all to me are relevant. And I would like to think that I have some interesting cut to the chase reductionist solutions for a lot of the problems, general problems that we as a nation have and that the world has.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that the curve for Austrian economics doesn't resemble the ski slopes.
Oh, no.
Up in picture
a graph. You know how the graph lines go up and down? Picture just tiny little lines going, just tiny little peaks and ups and down. You know, just tiny, tiny, tiny all the way across, where it's just a steady flow, like of a good heart rate with good blood pressure. None of these swings, these ridiculous swings. And now the Fed's wants to crank it up again. What are they calling inflation now? Quantitative easing?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the reason these cycles actually occur like they do, and if you really study a calendar, you'll see this happening every 10 to 20 years. There's a very gradual climb in the economy, and then the bottom falls out. Well, every period that they predetermine, they're going to sort of cash in on all this massive money, because that long period of time gives them the opportunity to buy businesses, to ship the jobs overseas, to find cheap labor, find cheap materials costs, cheap production, cheap shipping, the whole nine yards. They're making a fortune, and then they have to pay off one of the Illuminati families, and they take their turns.
Yeah.
Right now, you're looking at, I mean, look who's got all the money right now.
The banks?
Well, yeah.
They didn't lend it much. Well, they've been given it.
But as far as nations, wouldn't you say it's China? I mean, China has problems, but...
China has problems. I'm not saying you are. I'm not really into bashing China, because they've sort of earned a lot of what they have due to U.S. policy. And, you know, China was a credit card to finance our war. You know, thanks to Bush, the Republicans, they want to give us tax cuts. Oh, great. I'm all in favor of tax cuts. But then they combine it with spending that's astronomical.
Well, they gave them bonds, real estate bonds, mortgages, okay? Derivatives for hedge funds, you see?
Yeah, yeah.
For their investment. And that's where the problem is, you see?
And that, sure, but they're all tied into the Fed. It's a monopolistic oligarchic banking system, and so that's where the problem is. It's not the free market. People blame the bank, the bankers, but it's the lenders, but it's the central bank. The Fed is behind all this, and it interacts with the Bank of England and other central banks. And when you mention it's cyclical, a lot of these cyclical booms and busts, the trade cycle happens, and then that helps the other person maybe get elected if the Fed will, you know, kick up the money supply a bit. So they,
yeah,
you know,
manipulated. I mean,
yeah. And the foxes continue to guard the chicken coop no matter who's in power.
Yeah. If you can create jobs and make sure everybody has money, why can't that go on? Why can't that continue? Especially with a growing population, you would think there would be.
It should grow with, as Mises would call it, an unhampered market economy, an unhampered economy from interventionist government policy and regulation and creating money and inflation. That is the problem. People like to blame capitalism, but it's not really capitalism or the free market. This is a problem of statism and those politically connected crony capitalists who tweak the system, who pervert the system. Well, I'm all about clearing that out, naming names, and getting rid of that crowd, and having an honest free market system, which will function. It's not a utopian thing. It will work. It just needs some rules, which actually I've even set forth, and it doesn't involve a lot more government regulation, because that seems to be Obama's and everybody's solution. More regulation, more regulation. Well, who's protecting us from the regulators?
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of China, this, I have to criticize American labor unions here a minute, because they're not guilt-free of this whole problem either. Something that's also had to do with offshoring is not only the overtaxing and overregulating of American business, but a lot of labor unions over the years, by their strikes and especially by their threats of strikes, they've been able to impose above market wages on American employers, and those chickens have now come home to roost, because other countries can produce similar things or good things or better things at a lower price. So we've overpriced ourselves, the price of labor, plus the Federal Reserve is destroying the money, the value of our money, which drives down the value of money, and then that whole wage price wage chasing each other because of inflation, which is caused by the central government, because businessmen and labor unions aren't printing money 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that role of things.
There is a phenomenon that's going on with companies. Well, we'll use Walmart as an example. I've had attorney Carl Pearson on my show a number of times, and he's actually litigated over these issues. Walmart goes and of course they import a lot of goods from China.
Right.
The majority of what they sell is from China, but they do include some American brands to offer that to get people, Americans, to come to the store. Now, they're offering the lowest prices out of all the retailers on American products. And the way this is accomplished, according to Carl, is they do sort of what you might call a shakedown on these manufacturers. You want your products in our store, you have to sell it less than this guy will sell it. And they get the price down to the absolute rock bottom. Most of the manufacturers are losing money on the product that they provide to that organization. So they can't compete and they can't make a profit. They're actually losing money just to stay in the game, you see?
Yeah. Well, I know they're very adamant about offering the lowest prices they can. Walmart has made, it's for lower income people. It's, I shop there, they say that it's put, other local businesses out of business. Well, actually, if they want to say that, the consumer has, because when's the last time a consumer complained about paying lower prices? So, my whole thing about China is that the U.S. is spending so much money defending our rich allies with over 700 military bases. That's $1 trillion a year, the military, all this stuff. I'm not talking about defending the U.S. Of course I want our nation defended. But look at all this money we're giving to our rich allies who are also competitors, when that money should be invested in our economy, in our infrastructure, so that we could further compete with other countries and other low-wage countries. So there are many things that play into this this whole deal. Again, I don't like to see where things are going in this country and the loss of more jobs. And, Obama is doing everything the opposite of what I would have done, what Ron Paul Republicans would have done.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ron Paul Republicans were aware of the military spending in the budget. We're aware of this foreign policy that doesn't change regardless of who's in power. And I will never back away from that on this show, because it's bankrupting us.
Fred,
if
I know
not more so.
I know this is your show, but I have to ask you a question.
Sure.
I want to solicit your answer. And
sure.
And don't forget you were going to say something about the short-legged back daddy, too.
Yes.
What has to happen in your estimation for the plan that you're talking about to take effect? There are some things that would have to happen to overcome the resistance that would be there. I think a lot of people would welcome it, but in your eyes, what things have to happen politically? What has to happen to the government? What types of modifications does this whole fraud need?
Well, that requires to me, which is somewhat of a scary answer, that the system probably has to collapse. Ron Paul's been talking about the collapse of the dollar. I would like to see the American empire collapse and the rebirth of the American Republic. So if the empire collapses, that means we got to come home from all the foreign bases and quit all these overseas obligations. That has to happen, but I don't know how politically feasible that is. I fear down the road, a war between the haves and the have-nots, and a lot of the have-nots are new have-nots who are just otherwise good working people. And I also fear the possibility of food riots, speaking for myself there. There has to be a massive overhaul in taxes and regulation. I know the Tea Party is always talking about taxes. And so a lot of you may have heard of this, it's actually laughable. A lot of the Tea Party candidates for people, they can't even tell you what they would cut. You know, it's a billion here or this and that. I mean, I have ways in mind to do this without disrupting things too massively. For example, every state already has a Department of Transportation, Department of Energy, Department of, I had several things in mind, education, transportation, agriculture. Why do we need federal ones? I would get rid of most federal agencies. Now, there's going to be a lot of people thrown into unemployment. And for a lot of these bureaucrats and clerical workers, I recommend that they get a year's pay, a full pay with their benefits, which could be then portable after that, their benefits. But after that, you know, those agencies are gone, and we should quickly sell those former bureaucracies, the buildings, cheaply to the private sector, and they probably rehire a lot of those clerical people. So, again, every state already has a lot of these agencies. We don't need all the federal ones. Mm-hmm. And it's the federal government is just an expensive middleman. It's just ripping us off.
Wouldn't you say that just because the federal government would fall, let's say it collapses – and the economy collapses.
Don't excite me, Don. The first part, sorry.
Each state has a constitution. It has its own constitution. And that should have been the operating procedure from day one anyway.
You mean states' rights? Don, how many slaves do you want to own? I want 5 or 10, and I have thousands and it's just laying around that I could buy some slaves.
You know, without
they still use that BS, you know.
Yeah, without being political, each state is going to say, well, the government, federal government's collapsed. We can't depend on them. Now, who can they depend on? They have to depend on their people.
Therefore, you're correct. Therefore, each state already has a legislature, courts, judges, policemen, firemen, National Guard units, militias, jails, prisons, roads, utility companies. Each state has interstate highways, buses, trains, airports, hospitals, churches, banks, credit unions, insurance companies, newspapers, the internet, TV stations, radio stations, libraries, schools, universities, museums, landfills, recycling centers, daycare centers, retirement homes, parks. You know, so I've named farms, supermarkets, pharmacies, malls. The marketplace is vast, and every state could handle its own problems without Uncle Sam holding its hand.
Yeah, but you'd have to change what federal law has facilitated for so many years. You know,
well, there you go, Don. True. And the way I see that is we start off with nullification. We nullify most, if not all federal law. We just say our legislature says, no, we're not going to follow this. It's unconstitutional. take it somewhere else. And other states would hopefully join in, which brings me to my stronger point, is that I am always pushing the case for intellectual case for a peaceful secession, because secession is good. Secession is right. Secession works. And for the reasons I just mentioned, we have all of those other things right now, all those entities that every state already has. And secession does not mean war. It means that we have to definitely oppose trade barriers between states and territories and nations, but it means that the newly seceded states or territories would self-govern and self-finance, and all seceded states must pay for and maintain their own public works. So when tolls go to a highway or funding goes to a highway, that money may never go to the schools or children's health care. It just has to go to maintain the infrastructure. It's not out of selfishness. It's out of rationally allocating the funds to maintain the infrastructure. You know, but right now, we're spending billions to maintain the build the infrastructure of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Can you imagine if Alaska took control of their own oil fields?
Don, I'm glad you mentioned Alaska.
Colorado or Oklahoma or Texas, Arkansas, Don, Louisiana, on and on.
Sorry, no, Don?
Yeah.
Saudi Alaska. Alaska. The best thing about Sarah Palin's husband was he was in that Alaskan secessionist movement. You know, the media poo-pooed that, you know, put it down. I was praising it. Imagine Alaska, its own territory, and it's one of the biggest welfare recipients now, I think, of federal money, something like that. So, it gets all this. It doesn't need. Saudi Alaska, if you will, could really develop its energy resources and sell them to the lower 48 and elsewhere. It could be very successful. It'd be off the federal tit, and, we'd all be better off for it. And, of course, other states, too, but in particular Alaska, way up there. So, there's a lot of wealth throughout the states, and it could be developed. And, you know, it's just a shame that what's going on when it could be so much better. And I'm not talking about a utopia. I'm talking about rational ways through the market system to make it better for everyone.
Yeah. And the panic that might ensue the collapse of the economic system should be dissuaded and discouraged on the basis of explaining and teaching people what the true nature of the economy was that really had them by the throats.
Do you think that people will stop playing their video games and watching sports long enough to listen?
They're going to have to.
They're going to have to, that's for sure. And I would always promote the concept of liberty, property, and peace combined with social tolerance and personal responsibility.
Yeah. No video games, man.
No. that to me is a sports and video games. That's the downfall of the youth. Sports is for us to play and keep, fit. And I just could care less about professional sports and the multimillion dollar athletes and all of that. It's just, a way to maybe to distract us from what's going on. That's probably why governments like it and help fund it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they're allowed to, tolerate or force us to tolerate drug use and all the aberrant behavior that hits the news all the time from athletes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they idolize everything they do, including their criminal activities.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, I was never a sports guy. I just didn't care about sports. I was always a music guy. I idolized certain musicians. I know there was drugs in that world too, but at least they weren't subsidized by the government and, these massive teams and their billion-dollar owners and their millionaire players expecting us to build them a stadium. That's ridiculous. That is an anathema to capitalism. That is the perversion of capitalism. That money should be going for roads and bridges and the infrastructure, and most of it staying in our pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So back to this secessionist thing, some things I want to add to that is that the way I view things, newly seceded states, they won't have a huge, unrestricted central government stirring up international trouble. There will be no empire building or nation building and no troops stationed throughout the world. There will be no out-of-control, endlessly expanding military-industrial congressional complex. which, you know, it continues to see opportunity in endless civil wars and conflicts throughout the world. You know, and then we're the great martyrs. Oh, we have to send Uncle Sam in. Well, I got news for I'll challenge anybody to show me in the United States Constitution where it says America is supposed to have an empire.
Mm-hmm.
And when I criticize America, I'm not criticizing the people per se, and I'm not I don't hate America like Sean Hannity was. I gotta tell you something. Why do you hate America? I don't hate America. I hate the federal government. You know, and I always try to say, instead of using the term we did or America did, I will always try to say the federal government. So it puts the blame right where it belongs.
Yeah. Well, we've been hoodwinked into believing that the government is the servant that it's supposed to be, when in reality, all this was a private, irrevocable trust called a corporation. And the money has been funneled offshore to other countries, and is still being done so as we speak at this very moment.
The federal, you're right. That therefore, the federal mafia, that is the CIA, FBI, DEA, all these agencies, the federal mafia cooperates with the global mafia, the World Trade Organization, the UN, IMF, World Bank. You know, these are agencies I would withdraw from immediately. We don't need to be involved with them. I'm all for free trade. And free trade in my style of globalism does not mean subsidizing foreign countries or subsidizing businessmen. I'd rather make the corporate tax like 2% and, you know, no income tax, because as it is right now, the Constitution is supposed to be funded by what should be micro tariffs and micro taxes. We don't need an income tax, which helps fuel the war machine and pay the interest on the federal debt. 1913 was an awful year for America because it gave us the Federal Reserve System and the federal income tax. And both of those are exactly right out of the Communist Manifesto. Because in the Communist Manifesto, it has two famous planks. It has 10 planks towards the back of that little 1848 book. And the first plank, the second plank calls for a graduated income tax, a progressive or graduated income tax. Mm-hmm. And the fifth plank calls for a central bank. So clearly we have two of those right in our system right now. And I would try to get rid of them immediately. How did we get this far? Gee, how did America have police, courts, roads, a military before 1913, where there was no Federal Reserve System and no federal income tax? Gee, how did we ever get by?
I don't know. That answer might be hiding somewhere buried on Jekyll Island.
Yeah. Do you know about Plum Island?
Well, where they penned the Federal Reserve Act.
Oh, true. Down off of Jekyll Island, Georgia. Do you know about Plum Island?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, off of Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Federal Animal Research Center. That's the whole AIDS topic. That's another – for another day, I guess. But getting back to – I wanted to go off on Obama. Now y'all can hear my take on His Highness. First of all, Obama is already worse than Bush, only sooner, because Obama is spending even more and running much larger deficits than Bush and company. Obama is Bush 3 with a makeover on steroids. I mean, I laugh at this guy when he says, well, Republicans drive the car and give them the keys to the car and drive it in a ditch. Okay, Mr. President, so the car is in the ditch. Why do you want to keep it in the ditch by spending more? And just doing, you know, everything the same, only more, even faster. When I see and hear Obama, I do not see and hear a mixed race or mulatto president. What I see and hear is a smooth-talking lawyer who remains clueless about economics, economic history, and political economy. I mean, presently, I'm even comfortable thinking that Obama is, well, incompetent. You know, a nice guy perhaps, but his policies are very wrongheaded. And, you know, and I knew this would happen. And so just like Bush, Obama serves Wall Street, the big banks, the military-industrial complex, and the Israeli lobby. I mean, he's very happy to be the globalist, the New World Order's choice. You know, he's playing along. Obama may just as well be a mulatto, blue blood, skull and bones member. How do you like them apples?
He probably is, and I doubt that he's really an attorney. You
know? Well, yeah, there's too many attorneys anyway. Just another, you know, most politicians, or not most, but probably more than half are lawyers, and they, you know, attorneys, and they just write laws to suit themselves. They're, you know, it's just a mess. That's why I really believe in term limits.
Well, you know, many paint him as a narcissist. I just want to make a quick comment here, Fred.
Yeah.
You're doing such a great job. He's painted as a narcissist, okay? He likes how he looks. He likes to show himself off. And
so do I, but I'm smarter.
Well, if he had all these credentials, if he had a bachelor's degree and a master's degree and a doctoral degree, and he could back up anything, if he had one genuine family photo, I'd take all of the stuff I've written about him, all of my research, off of my website.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But you see, he can't prove that because it's not true. He would. He's a narcissist.
Well, yeah. I don't know the answer for all that. If he was a Muslim and wasn't born in the U.S. and he was going down the right path in terms of economics and civil liberties and all this, I'd be rooting for him. This has nothing to do with his race. And people like to say, you know, they were trying to frame it like, oh, all criticism of Obama is racism. Well, I haven't said anything racist in my little description that I can know of, except I referred to him as a mulatto or mixed race, which I don't think is a big deal. He's got a white mama. You know, so many American blacks voted for him because they saw a dark-skinned man and they didn't look beyond all that.
That's if you buy the story, though, see?
Yeah. I mean, everybody should notice how merrily Obama signs these increased military budgets, which are already gigantic, you know, while meanwhile the U.S. foreign policy remains the same regardless of who owns federal power. I mean,
yeah, and the returning soldiers are not getting their veterans benefits. That's great.
They never are. About 10 years ago, I saw on 60 Minutes, I saw roughly, I think there was about 20. There was two rows of vets, and they were all complaining about how difficult it was for them to get treatment for their Gulf War syndrome disease. It was shameful to watch them have to, you know, to have to plead for what they should just. I mean, I can't believe the VA doesn't take prompter, you know, much better care of these folks. It's just amazing. They do all this. They serve. They get wounded. They, you know, they come back, and this is what they get. How soon we forget. So, you know, that's a problem that has to be fixed immediately. In fact, I've long thought that they should get rid of the VA and give all our veterans a voucher so that they can go to the hospital and doctors of their choice in their states.
Yeah, you're right. And that may end up being at Walmart before it's all over, you know?
Well, I'm really not anti-Walmart. I'm anti-subsidies and I'm anti-protectionism.
I'm just saying everything is falling under this big, gigantic corporate umbrella.
Uh-huh.
And we have laws against monopolies. Since when does the federal government own and run businesses outside of what their designation under the so-called constitutional republic?
Well, they shouldn't. Neither should state governments. I don't or local governments. They shouldn't own convention centers. They shouldn't own sports complexes. They shouldn't own auto industries or subsidize them. What I would have done for GM in Detroit is I would not have bailed them out. I would have let them go bankrupt, and I would have made their corporate tax 2%. And I'd let them, come out of the ashes of what happened. It's just a shame what's happened. And why bail these companies out and why give them subsidies when why don't we just cut their taxes and let them breathe and let everybody breathe? Small business, you know, I don't want to tax the rich more. I want to detax everybody. I don't mind paying micro taxes, especially in my own state or my own area, but I really resent sending so much to Washington, which is just an expensive middleman they're just a ripoff artist and they get away with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, we could go down the trail of the fraud of setting up a mortgage and what really goes on there. Maybe on another show we can do that. But I bring that up because the bailout is supposed to save those that lost money. But that was all theft to begin with. Did you see any books?
No.
Did they present the books to Congress?
No. And, you know, of course, you know, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, they have a big role in this, as does the Fed. And
countrywide, yeah. First American Credco, AIG.
And this whole Obama thing about transparency, what a joke. I mean, Ron Paul wanted transparency especially for the Fed. The Fed doesn't want to be audited. It doesn't want to have its powers restricted. You know, again, it's a Marxist institution. It's the fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, why would we want the second and fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto enshrined in our Constitution and our political system? I mean, I would throw them out immediately. I drew up my own Constitution, what I call a secession solution, that addresses all of these things, economics and, banking, environment, all these types of things that could be done without all this, more government constantly as a solution for our problems. It just doesn't work. And the stimulus is ridiculous. Instead of the stimulus, it should have been massive, massive tax cuts. And when I talk about taxes, what I would get rid of immediately are there would be no income tax. Federal income tax. I don't believe a state income tax either. There would be no withholding taxes, no inheritance tax, no taxes on interest income, no estate taxes, no death taxes, no capital gains taxes, no taxes on retirement income, you know, no prohibitions to internet gambling. All states pay for their own public works. You know, and of course, and if you want to pay more, voluntary taxation is there for you if you want to pay more. Do you want to pay more, Don?
No.
Don, you'll get more if you pay more. Don, taxes are what we pay to live in a free society.
Let me present one more thought to you on this.
Sure.
You have people who are joining this ever-expanding monstrosity called the federal government. And what that provides for the political party and power when it occurs like it is right now with a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president, and I use that with reservation, you're expanding the voter base and all those people associated with the families. But it's more like they're surrounding themselves with bodies. The harder it is, you know, the thicker the wall of people around them, the harder it is to address issues directly.
You mean around the feds?
Yeah, that's the game that's being played, whether it's legislative or judicial or talking about the administration. The administration bears no responsibility or culpability for its actions.
Well, and that's why they hate the internet. Governments want, that's the thing. They don't like the internet. They would like to control it. Some are controlling it, and I've said for quite a while, I think the two wedges they're going to use to regulate the internet, instead of going after individual criminals, if they're, you know, real criminals, violence, fraud, that type, they're going to use child porn, and they're going to use terrorism, and, you know, national security. That will be their way to regulate the internet. I that's what I see them trying to do on the horizon.
Yeah, well, what are you saying? You go to the gas company website to pay your bill, and you're going to see kitty porn, or
no? I mean that the feds,
as a pretext, you mean?
Yes, yeah. They will use terrorism and they will use child porn as a way to regulate the internet and get their mitts further entwined in it because they don't like the internet. There's even a book called Orwell's Revenge, where it says Big Brother is not watching us as much as now with the internet we're watching them, because you could tell somebody in Japan in a split second that you were in a car wreck or something. You know, you can just it's instant now, and so that is a big threat to their power.
I bet you Al Gore is having a hissy fit right now.
You mean at his new $8 million house out there in Malibu or wherever it is?
Well, I mean, you know, he invented the internet, and this is
his
baby, right?
Yeah. Well, if he's got that new big house, and you know, he does all this stuff, he must have huge feet to leave that big carbon footprint. I just wonder, you know, and for me, the people who are the pro war crowd, they're just as wrong as their whole pro war crowd, the whole war thing is, as the environmentalist climate change crowd as they are about climate change. They're both, you know, two sides of the same coin, and they're just a cluster of errors on both sides. What I would say to the climate change crowd is, you know, how do you account for climate change before industrialization? You know, if we are responsible for some of this so-called global warming, maybe it's a couple percentage points, but I mean, the sun plays a huge role, and so does the Earth's own cycling.
Mm-hmm.
The way I see it, and this climate gate thing that opened and that happened in England at the University of East Anglia, that should be on a Watergate scale of investigation and outrage. And, you know, I haven't heard much about it, but there's a lot of culpable scientists who are on the government payroll, and, you know, they tweak things, and, you know, it seems like they're protected from what they do. And meanwhile, they're calling, you know, that the sky is falling.
Yeah. When you look at, I don't mean to sound like I'm changing the subject. I'm responding to something you said a minute or so ago. When you look at a war and the pretext for whatever the war is, okay, that we were attacked or something was stolen, or, you know, they make it up as they go along. And the story changes almost hour to hour on occasion.
Yeah.
Okay. All you have to do is watch CNN and you'll see that.
Don't
recommend it unless you just want to see that.
Well, we're going to get those weapons of mass destruction. Then we're going to do some nation building and bring democracy.
Oh, yeah,
and, you know,
there's one half of the whole issue. The other issue is that they politicize a religion. Okay. Who is it that's after us? Okay. Who is it that created these attacks?
Are you talking about politicize the Muslim religion?
Yeah. And in other words, it's not enough to say that they're from Iraq or they're from Afghanistan, which we all know is a lie anyway. But they put a double whammy, because those people who don't care about politics and know nothing about international law or international commerce or
that's most people.
then at least you can hit them on their core religious beliefs or their religious convictions.
Yeah.
So they pit Christians against Muslims. Why is that implied? Because they drilled into us that America is a Christian state. You have, or a nation, and you have a guy sitting in the White House who claimed he was a Christian doing everything that a Muslim does, even professing his allegiance to the Muslim faith. Now he's doing a double whammy there. Who is that? Who is a Muslim? Where are they?
Yeah.
Where are the Christians?
Even Bush, didn't Bush, you know, allude to the fact that he was doing the work of the Lord, or, you know, that he was, godly inspired for this invasion of Iraq?
While he gives a sign to Satan to his friends.
Well, you know what Iraq stands for? Idiotic Republican Authorized Quagmire. Do you know what, listeners, do you know what Iran stands for? Israel requires American naivety. Or you could also say Iraq stands for Israeli required American quagmire. So if you look at who this benefits, you know, us fighting the Muslims, it's Israel. It's the Zionists. They're the ones that stand to gain from this. They get their free American aid. They get their endless supply of free American-made murder weapons. And because they want to ethnically cleanse, you know, part of the Middle East. They want a greater Israel. They want more power. And I believe that they were behind 9/11, which gave them, you know, their Mossad gave them the pretext for all this. And let's face it, the Mossad, CIA, and MI6, they cooperate together on a global scale.
Yes. Well, Fred, I've got to do this as your co-producer and remind you that we're out of time.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I hope that our listeners enjoyed tonight's program. I'd like to thank you for your help again, Don, and I'd like to thank BBS Radio for the opportunity to bring you my views for you listeners tonight. And thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you the same time next week, same place.
Thank you, Fred. Have a good night.
PK, signing out.